Today's program is brought to you by Austin East Ciders. For more information, visit their website at austineastciders.com.
I'm Erin Fairbanks, host of The Farm Report. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good evening and welcome to
Fun Men About It
on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I'm Mary Izette.
And I'm Chris Kuzmi.
And we're your co-hosts through this weekly journey of all things fermented.
Archived on Stitcher, iTunes, and right here on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Before we start and get too far into our show, which I'm very, very excited about, and I want to just say thank you to everybody who showed up on Ollie the Trolley last Thursday. We had an amazing time going to all the different breweries, being Folks Beer, Strong Rope, Kings County Brewers Collective, and Interborough. It was really fun to host everybody with Kelly Taylor, and we got on that old-school 1950s trolley and rolled around. It was quite a good time and a great way to travel. I think Mary had a good time. It took a while for both of us to recover from it. No reason we should do that on a Thursday, but it was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I've been under the weather for a week and a half, which didn't contribute. No.
But welcome back. And then also thank you to Six Point Brewing Company. Keir Hamilton, the head brewer there, first of all, they've been doing this thing for 5 years, benefiting the Humane Society of New York. And what's really cool about this is they invite all their brewing friends, or at least 30 of them, to do these one-off beers that never made before, never, and probably will never be made again. And it's just such an awesome event of a lot of really, really unique beers. Thank you, Six Point, for doing it yet once again, and for including Dave and I from Fifth Hammer to brew our non-spiced pumpkin honey porter. I thought it was delicious, and kudos to you, Keir, for juggling 30 different beers in this style. Totally above me on the call of duty of what you normally do for a Six Point Brewing Company. Speaking of brewing companies, Blocktoberfest is on October 22nd at The Well. Blocktoberfest is our annual fundraiser for the New York City Brewers Guild, and that puts on New York City Beer Week. This is really great. Only New York City breweries attend and serve beer at this event. I'll be playing as part of the Homebrewsitions as well this day, and it's going to be a lot of fun. Please, if you can make it, it's 12:30 to 5:30 at The Well in Bushwick. You can go to NewYorkCityBrewersGuild.com and go to the events portion of that page or of that website. Be able to find out more information on that. Basically, it's $10 to get in, and then it's $5 per 12-ounce pour, and then you can split that into 4 6-ounce pours as well. It's a really good time, and we really love the support so that we can stay organized and be doing stuff when Beer Week comes. Also coming up, Learn to Homebrew Day, November 5th. Learn to Homebrew Day was established by the American Homebrewers Association in 1999 to encourage homebrewers to introduce their non-brewer friends and family to the most rewarding hobby, obsession, and lifestyle since the beginning of time. Bold words. Isn't that cool how they write that up? It's true, though, too. So that's what kind of brought Mary and I together. That kind of is what started this show, homebrewing, and we want to share it with you. At Fifth Hammer Brewing Company, I'll definitely be brewing during the afternoon, and I invite you guys to come by Long Island City. And then also at The Well, last but not least, on October 30th, Puptoberfest by Flying Dog Brewing Company is going to be at The Well. They are partnering up with Brunity and Mary and Flying Dog The Well to help raise awareness and funds for an amazing cause, Pets for Vets. So basically Pets for Vets rescues shelter dogs, trains them, and then partners these second chance pups with deserving veterans. And I think it's just really sweet and really beautiful, especially after seeing a sheepdog exhibition yesterday at the Sheep and Wool Festival. I thought that was amazing. Thank you for introducing me to Sheep and Wool Festival, Mary. Mary's saving her voice because she's going to talk a lot later in this show. Because we're all very excited to have our friend Dave Jansen on the line, calling in from Canada. Dave, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks, Chris. How are you?
I'm good. I am really, really excited about today's show. Mary and I have been brewing together a long time, and we really love low-alcohol beers, and one of our first beers we launched with as Cousette Libations was a Grisette. But before we go to all these topics, why are we talking to you? Who are you? You have a really great and fun journey that has brought you to your blog and website, and tell us a little about yourself.
Yeah, all right. So I started brewing, I guess, about 9 years ago, when I might or might not have been of legal age to do that sort of thing.
Might or might not.
Yeah. So I was a chemistry student, and I was like, oh, I could probably make beer. That's like water chemistry. I started brewing 2007. And around 2009, I started taking it really seriously. I'd been drinking some Belgian beers and fell in love with Saison. Started making Belgium trips starting in 2009, and that got me even more interested in Belgian beers. And from that point, I took a couple years off, moved to Canada, and then again really seriously started brewing, focusing almost exclusively on Saisons, which paid off for me. So it was 2013, I guess. Yeah, 2013, I won first place in the National Homebrew Competition in the Belgian category with a Saison.
Oh, right on.
So since maybe 2011 or 12, I've been brewing almost exclusively Saisons, and I got interested in this historic Belgian beer stuff, which is kind of what leads us to Grisette, I suppose.
Right.
I got interested in historic Belgian beer by seeing some of the historic styles reemerging, and I was really stoked on Lambic and Saison, and I was like, oh, I should learn more about the history of these, and started looking at what other brewers were doing. So that's what got me into Grisette, where we are now.
Well, what I really love about this, about your journey, is that you're sharing what you're learning as you go. And what is your website? How do you pronounce it, and how do you spell it?
I pronounce it colloquially as a non-French speaker, because I myself am a non-French speaker. So it would be, if an Anglophone were to sound it out, it would be Horse Category Brewing, and that's horsecategorybrewing.com, category spelled with an I-E. So I started this blog because I'd moved to Germany for work, and I couldn't brew, and I had all this, like, beer angst that I needed to get out somehow. So I started publishing what I was doing, or what I had been doing, and what I plan to do in the future.
What are some of the favorite things that you have on this site that you found just fun? What sparked sharing it? I mean,
yeah, I guess I think about things in a pretty detailed way. I'm still a chemist, and that's my day job. So I think about things in a pretty, like, process-driven and detailed way, and I had done all this work with Saison, and I had achieved some good results, so I thought I should start writing about that. And then I was living in Europe, and I had access to all these breweries that a lot of people don't have access to, so I thought, oh, I can write about visiting these places, too, and what I learned from them.
It's pretty great how you share your visits to for a lot of the breweries. I mean, I have not yet done my Belgian, the Belgian trip, but I have diving into your blog and feel like I'm there.
Oh, perfect.
Because of those details, because really going in there and the pictures and showing, you know, your way through the day, it's been really beautiful.
Yeah, it's been good.
You're a strong member of Milk the Funk as well.
Yeah, that's right. So I'm one of the wiki editors of Milk the Funk, which means I generate a small portion of content. There's like 99% Dan Pixley's information and 1% the rest of us. So I'm one of that 1%.
Right on. Let's get into Grisette for a second. So I first read about Grisette, and I think you mentioned this in your latest blog about it, with Phil Markowski, is kind of where I first saw that. And Mary brought it back to us as well, talking about the Grisette. Saisons themselves can be pretty widely defined, but Grisette is kind of a subcategory within that.
Yeah. So choosing like a UK-centric or North American-centric mindset to break down styles can be difficult with things like Belgian beer. So you're right. It is kind of a wide target, and it overlaps quite strongly with Saison. So I also first learned of it in farmhouse sales, and I've met some brewers in Europe that first learned of it in farmhouse sales, which shows how it's not prevalent there anymore.
What does the word Grisette mean?
Grisette is is little gray, like a diminutive form of the word gray. And there's some lore about what it could mean in terms of how the name derived, possibly because of the stone that the miners would have been mining, or because of the women that would have been serving beer. I think those are rumors and lore, and I'm happy to leave them there. I haven't seen anything that really substantiates them, so I wouldn't present that as absolute truth, but those are some of the stories out there.
So then there's a lot of rumors and lore of the style of the name. It seems like it's hard to pinpoint exactly how to define a grisette as well, or that's been a lot of there's been a wide interpretation. So
particularly here in America.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
And people using the name because it became a buzzword, a few years back as well.
So give us a crash course on what you have found a grisette is.
Yeah, cool. Okay. So that's a good way to start this. I agree that it's been interpreted in wildly different ways, and that's what brought me into all this research. So if I were to sum it up very quickly, I would say that grisette is a pale beer brewed with wheat and barley, and it's noticeably hoppy, and it's not very acidic, and it doesn't have a strong Brettanomyces expression. So like an easy drinking, light refreshing, pale wheat beer with some hops.
What ABV would it generally do you think that has that changed over the years?
I don't think that's changed too much. I think something like Saison has changed more. So historically, it seems that central to the identity of grisette is that it wasn't a beer that was intended for long-term aging, for the most part, whereas Saison historically is a beer that's intended for prolonged aging. And now most Saisons you find aren't very aged beers. So historically, Saison has kind of moved in a grisette-type direction.
What sort of water profiles do you think are best for, like, the grisette, or?
Oh man!
I mean, you're the water. You're the water. You're the water. You're the water chemist and your oceanography, man. Awesome.
That's right. Yeah, I do. My day job is water chemistry. I think there's a good breakdown in farmhouse ales of some different water profiles that. That you could find in this south central region of Belgium. So grisette, much like Saison, comes from the Hainaut province, this sort of southwestern, south central area of Belgium. So farmhouse ales breaks down some different water profiles. The water there is generally fairly high in mineral content. So if you wanted to brew towards the direction of a Belgian brewer, you would want to probably add some stuff to your water. I usually shoot for about 100 to 130 ppm calcium, about 150 ppm sulfate, about 110 ppm chloride. So fairly balanced sulfate to chloride. And that's probably slightly on the low end of minerals in terms of what many of these brewers might be starting with. But I would balance a little bit towards sulfate, but not excessively so, if I were going to brew something like this. And those are all total concentrations. I start here in Victoria with basically distilled water and because the groundwater here is so low in minerals.
Cool. So let's move on to malt. So speaking from recipe formulation, if somebody who hasn't brewed a grisette before wants to start with a grisette, what are kind of some of the ranges and types of malt that you would recommend that they choose from?
Cool. Yeah, I think that grisette can be really simple on the malt side or extremely complicated, depending on how you want to do that. And I don't mean complicated in terms of a lot of malts, but in terms of the specifics of the malt. So for your base malt, that's going to be probably about 80% of the grist. I would choose something like a continental European Pilsner, so like a Weirmann or Franco-Belge, just kind of like a standard Pilsner. If you wanted to use a North American Pilsner, I don't think that would be a disaster. I think you'll get some more character out of the European one, so I would lean the European direction.
Mm-hmm.
And if you wanted to do something a little bit darker, like a continental European pale malt, Dingemans makes a malt like this. You could do something like that as well. I don't think that would be problematic. And then the rest would be wheat. And historically, it would be malted wheat, but it would be very under-modified malted wheat. So if you wanted to start simple, you could just use wheat malt for that roughly 20% we have left, or you could split that between wheat malt and flaked wheat to make your average wheat composition a little bit less malted. You could go with something like that. If you really wanted to nerd out and try to do it closer to history, you could get what's called chitted wheat, which is like it's basically as unmalted as you could make a malt and still have it be a malt. So it's extremely under-modified wheat malt. And Chateau or Castle Malting in Belgium makes a chitted wheat that you could try to source.
And then what would one do to the chitted wheat? What would be the brewing process?
So traditionally you'd be using step mashes for a lot of this stuff. Historically, there would have been a mash in the beta-glucan rest, so somewhere around 110 Fahrenheit, 45-ish Celsius. And then you'd probably do a protein rest and then a saccharification rest. I don't think if you skipped that beta-glucan, I don't think that'd be a disaster. It might be helpful with less modified malts if you really wanted to go for it. But yeah, a multi-step infusion mash is a kind of a classic Belgian way to go. And I should have mentioned with the grain, I mean, that's like the core of grisette. If you wanted to throw in some other grains, I don't think that would be wildly un-grisette-like. I haven't seen anything historically that says grisette would have had oats or it would have had rye or something, but I don't think it's a serious problem if you want to throw in a bit of other grains as well.
Cool. And those are all good riffs out there. I mean, if you would want to go, you know, beyond the traditional grisette, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly.
As we've seen, and probably some of us have done.
And we're guilty of it. I mean, I'm relieved to hear you say rye, because our grisette, what we put out as a grisette was a rye grisette. It was wheat, rye, and as like 30% of the grist and 70% two row.
I think that's pretty grisette-like.
Let's take a short break, and then we'll be right back, because I want to talk about, you said it's a tradition, well, traditionally was a hoppy beer, but I'm sure it's not just any hop. So stay tuned for Hops and Grisette with Dave Jansen.
Fermentabag.
Are you an East Sider? We live on the east side of town. Our shipping container studios are at Roberta's in Bushwick, across the East River, separating New York City and Brooklyn. In all my recent travels, it seems like the east side of town is the cool side of town in cities across the country. East Nashville is full of musicians and weird bars. The up-and-coming neighborhood around 8th Street in D.C., on the east side, is overflowing with exciting food and nightlife. The best hidden spots and funky artists in New Orleans are in the Marinian Bywater, which, yup, is the east side of town. So, as East Siders, we love drinks that represent our values. And nothing is more fitting than a cool, refreshing can of Austin East Siders. That's East Cider with a C. As the name implies, it is cider, and it's handmade on, you guessed it, the east side of Austin, Texas, using bittersweet and bittersharp cider apples. Cider apples are full of tannins, adding astringency and complexity of flavor to every sip. Austin East Ciders uses a mixture of European and Pacific Northwest apples to achieve ultimate flavor. Austin East Ciders is available in a few different variations, including original flavor, Texas honey, and two new additions, hopped and pineapple. Here at Heritage Radio, we love Austin East Ciders with some ribs, pulled pork, and even pizza. Especially Roberta's Pizza. You can find out more at AustinEastCiders.com and remember to hashtag EastCiders to show your East Side pride. You can also find Austin East Ciders on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
Welcome back to Ferment About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We are with our friend Dave Jansen on the line from HorseCategoryBrewing.com. That's HorseCategoryBrewing.com. And we're talking about grisettes. But before we go back into it, we just had a cider commercial, and I'd be remiss not to announce Cider Week is happening next week in New York City. Go to Cider Week NYC, October 21st to 30th. And I almost forgot all about it, so I'm excited to remember that it's apple
and
season.
Especially Wassail, which is New York City's only cider pub and restaurant is having a lot of great events, so definitely check out their events for sure.
Yeah, man. Awesome. But we're talking about grisettes right now. Now the topic is grisettes, and we're just getting into what types of hops to use traditionally for the style.
Well, wait, I actually want to talk, because I think when we talk about hops, you know, a hoppy beer in America, it means a very different thing these days than when you say a hoppy beer.
Right.
Speaking about, you know, a Saison or a Grisette.
Hoppy doesn't always mean bitter, though.
Yeah, definitely.
Right. Or kind of some of the hop profiles that we're used to. So let's talk a little bit about what you mean by a hoppy Grisette.
Yeah, cool. That's a really good clarification.
Because I think there needs to be like a recalibration when you talk about certain styles in today's environment.
Yeah, that's good. So it's hoppy in terms of Belgian pale beers. And I think Belgian beer gets a bit of a bad rap at times for not being very hoppy. There's a fair amount of hoppy Belgian beer out there, but the mainstream Belgian beer has moved in a less hoppy direction. But yeah, if you compare a Grisette to an IPA, the Grisette will seem not very hoppy. So it would be brewed using continental European-type hops, so things like Saaz or Styrian Goldings. Potentially it would have been brewed with UK hops, so like Goldings or Fuggles or German hops. So these kind of noble or noble-type hops that don't give a lot of forward fruity or floral flavors and a little bit more herbal on the herbal spicy end, sort of smoother hops for the same unit of hoppiness than what you might find out of like West Coast North American hops.
Mm-hmm. And then talk about additions.
So historic Belgian beers tend to favor bittering hops over flavor hops a lot of the time. So I've seen a lot of old Belgian recipes that say something like, throw the hops in, boil for 4 hours, and then maybe throw a little bit more hops in. Or maybe throw the hops in and boil for 2 hours, and then throw your finishing hops in and boil 2 more hours, and then you're done. So finishing hops are a bit of a different story compared to what we might be used to from conventional modern brewing. So I think that Grisette still would have had some finishing hops, especially as you modernize the style. But generally, I think hopping rates would have been on the order of 4 grams per liter, which is about half an ounce per gallon, for total hopping, using something like a Saaz type hop or a Styrian Golding, and splitting that with a fair amount on the bittering side towards the early part of the boil.
Now, you bring up a good point when you talk about these long boils. What is your recommendation for boil time, I suppose?
Yeah, that's another good question. So a lot of these old Belgian beers, like long boil was pretty common and was believed to be beneficial for the beer. It would have helped the beer to darken as well. So especially with the sorts of malts that Belgians would have been using 100 years ago, they would favor darkening during the boil more than, say, North American malts might. So I tend to boil for about 90 minutes. I don't see a need to boil for 4 hours as might have been done previously. I think you could also boil for 60 minutes if you wanted to. I don't think 90 is absolutely necessary. But if your end goal was to try to be as historically accurate as possible, a longer boil is probably better. If your end goal is to make the beer that you find most delicious, then do the sort of boil that you find most delicious.
Right.
You probably also have to find maltsters that were less or malt less modified.
If you're going to go traditional. Really go. Right, step mash. And then let's move into to yeast.
Yeah, so yeast is like, I've spent an unreasonable amount of time researching Grisette, and yeast is the one big question.
Yes.
I would say, so I'll start with things I know to be certainly true. Grisette is an ale that comes from the southwestern, south-central part of Belgium. Ales throughout almost the entire history of Grisette would have been mixed culture beers. So not pure culture beers, because for most of this time it wasn't necessarily understood that yeast is what caused fermentation. So there would have been repitching of the yeast, but it was not a pure yeast. It was a mixture of Saccharomyces and Brettanomyces and bacteria, some combination of those.
Mm-hmm.
And possibly other wild yeast as well. So Grisette's definitely a mixed culture beer historically, and it's definitely an ale. But because Grisette's not a beer that's designed for much aging, and because it has a reasonable hopping rate, it's also the sort of beer that by the time most people would have been drinking it, you wouldn't necessarily have known that it was a mixed culture beer. And I think that's quite important. And that's where, in the modern world, some grisette breweries, I think, are making, or some breweries making grisettes, I think, are not really making grisettes. So I don't know. It's somewhat ambiguous from the historic documents. Mm-hmm. If the yeast would have been more saison-like, or maybe a little bit more neutral in profile, I think that either one would be a good option. So for my personal taste, I tend to brew grisettes with saison yeasts or saison appropriate yeast strains. I know brewers that also are quite familiar with the history in Belgium and France do the same. That when they brew a grisette, they use saison strains. But I think if you wanted to use a more neutral Belgian ale strain, maybe something like what some of the Trappist monasteries are using, I think that would also be an appropriate way to go.
And going back to mixed fermentation, I think, you know, I always think people that aren't as familiar with mixed fermentations, you can sometimes walk into a bar and have, you know, three different beers, and as you know, bars generally do, you know, they might just have general descriptions and say brewed with Brettanomyces or mixed fermentation. And really, it very much depends on, like you said, how much time that beer has had, and then also where the strain of Brett, as well as where and when and how it was added. I mean, obviously, you know, but I'm just speaking to people maybe that have less out there that have less experience, that these mixed fermentation can go a lot of different ways. You can have a huge spectrum where you can't detect them. You know, you can't detect maybe what we traditionally think of Brettanomyces as, you know, this farmhouse ale when you think about some of the barrel-aged, you know, more traditional barrel-aged Brett beers that we all kind of started with, to modern-day mixed fermentation where they're, you know, where Brett and Saccharomyces are being added and primary, and they're being served fresh, and you're not getting that Brettanomyces character. You might get more fruitiness from the Brett. So I just wanted to kind of put that out there.
Right, in his latest blog post and with his recipe, Dave, you have cultured from Thuriez, right?
Yeah. So I've been using yeast from Brasserie Thuriez. It's in the northwest part of France, near Dunkirk. That's the big city that's closest to you. This is theoretically the origin of the Y yeast French saison strain. They do behave quite differently. So Daniel at the brewery at Brasserie Thuriez is getting his yeast from a Belgian lab. So it's in its absolute origin, it's a Belgian strain, and he's just using it because that's the strain that he likes. His strain doesn't attenuate the way that 3711 does. So if people listening are familiar with Y-East 3711, they'll know that it kind of rips through anything in a bit of a shocking way.
Yep.
So his Daniel's yeast doesn't attenuate like that. It does attenuate well, but not absurdly well. They also are different in their flavor profiles, in their flocculation characteristics, and in the way they look while they're fermenting. So it's definitely a different yeast. And if I'm going to choose a single saison strain, that's the best one I've found so far. But I'm also partial to yeast blending, so maybe taking something of DuPont origin, like a 3724 from Y Yeast or 565 from White Labs, and blending that with Y Yeast 3711, or you can come up with other blends as well. That's kind of fun to play around with. So, I've been going with that, with the Thuriez strain, and I really like that. But it's not commercially available as I've been using it.
So what do you recommend if somebody wants to go? So like you said, you could probably recommend maybe somebody mixing the saison yeasts. Obviously, you could just go with something like a traditional French saison if you wanted to keep it simple.
Absolutely.
What if you wanted to mix it up and actually do a mixed culture? What would you recommend?
Yeah. Okay. So that opens a lot of possibilities. I think it was a really good clarification and explanation of mixed cultures that you added, Mary. Because I think that these beers all get lumped into one, but there's a huge diversity of where they can go based on specific strains and conditions they're used in and time they're given. So, I think I'm looking towards something like what Jester King is doing. So they make a beer called Petit Prince, and they're using their mixed culture, which has a couple different saison strains in it. It has some wild stuff from around their brewery and potentially some bottle dregs as well. I imagine they talk about this, and I don't remember exactly what they're using. But when you have some of their beers fresh, they taste basically like normal saison-type beers. And then as you let them age, that mixed culture expresses itself more. So I think if you were to try to make your own mixed culture for something like this, like, again, reinforcing that grisette generally is a young beer, so maybe grisette isn't the best choice to try to get a lot of mixed culture character, I would say go for some saison-based strains, maybe blending in some Belgian more standard ale strains, and then bottle dregs from some of your favorite saison breweries, I think, is a good way to go for getting some of the Brett and bacteria. So there's plenty of great examples in the U.S., and I imagine if you're trying to brew some of these beers with a mixed culture, you've been drinking some mixed culture beer. So I'd just save up some of your favorite dregs, maybe biasing towards what some saison breweries are using rather than what some lambic breweries are using, because maybe you don't want quite that much funkiness, but maybe you want a bit of a faster turnaround. But yeah, I think the doors are pretty much open. You can also go with some lab cultures that are some of your favorites. I think the East Bay is making some great Brett blends that I think could work out well.
You're having a lot of fun brewing a lot. Tell us about your Solera project currently. You bought a big barrel with your friend and are throwing stuff in and out of there. What's going on with that?
Yeah, yes. So although I seem to be most well-known for grisettes, it's actually, I'm intellectually interested in it, and I like drinking them, but I wouldn't say those are my favorite beers. So I would say my favorite beers are something like lambic, and that's kind of what I'm trying to push my barrels towards. So I'm brewing lambic inspired wort at this point to top them up. I've got a full wine barrel and a half wine barrel that I co-own both of them with some friends. And yeah, we've been draining out of the full barrel, taking maybe 6 gallons out and topping up with 6 gallons of wort, turbid mashed raw wheat and barley, aged hops, open cooled overnight. So like a following lambic approach, and I'm careful not to call my own beers lambics for a number of reasons, but definitely lambic inspired and putting them in the barrel, and that's been pretty exciting so far. Reading some great results coming out, and then I have many beers that I'm brewing in carboys. Nobody should ever see where I live. It's a disaster. It's like 30 carboys in my living room.
That's awesome. That reminds me of Mary's basement.
That's what I need. I need some place where it's not like you open the door and there they are. They need to be around at least one corner.
Yep. So you've been to Belgium. If you're a home brewer, I always like to get advice. If you're a home brewer that is, or if a home brewer that is planning a trip to Belgium would ask you, hey, you know, what are some of your favorite places? What do you really recommend? Especially a home brewer that's interested in, you know, mixed fermentation, some of these funky Belgian style beers and just learning and also experiencing something that you wouldn't otherwise. That's a wide category. But what are some of your favorites?
Okay, this is great. So I've been giving this advice out a lot, and I ended up, because I was basically creating it from scratch so many times, I've made a number of blog posts about it, like visiting lambic breweries, visiting Belgium in general, visiting saison breweries.
Yep.
But some of my highlights are, this is like my ideal Sunday of life. If you're in Belgium on basically any Sunday of the year, I would go to this cafe that's roughly straight west of Brussels called In de Verzekering en Tegen de Grote Dorst, which is, Grote Dorst is like the shortened name, and it's In Defense Against the Great Thirst. It's only open for like 2 or 3 hours on Sunday mornings for the church crowd after they get out of church.
But nice.
Yeah, it's great. It's such a funny, like, it's the best balance of beer and Belgian culture. So I would go there in like 10 or 11 in the morning and have some excellent lambic. They've got a great list of cellared stuff and current stuff and unblended or lambic from like bags or kegs, like straight lambic. And then I would go from there to Decam, which is one of the smallest commercial lambic producers in Belgium, and also only open on Sundays for a couple hours. And there you can hang out in the cellar and see what's going on. That's like my best Belgian day is these two lambic things put together. If you're really keen on brewing and visiting some of the breweries, then I think that's great. And some of them can be tough to get to and require a bit of planning. But on the last Saturday of the month, there's a saison brewery in Pepe, Brasserie à Vapour, and they brew once a month on the last Saturday, and you're welcome to join and watch that.
Cool.
They brew with some of the oldest, craziest brewing equipment that you'll see in use. So that's really an amazing experience to go watch them brew. They're brewing with steam power. So their mash mixing is powered by a steam engine and this big belt system. So even when you walk in the door to the brewery, it reeks of machine grease, and it's sticky hot from all the steam. And you walk over to the mash tun, it's this big iron open-top mash tun. That's an amazing experience. The beer, sometimes the beer is great, sometimes the beer is less great, but really the experience can't be beat to me.
Awesome. Those are great recommendations. Thank you so much. I think I see a lot of people, you know, especially like on Facebook, you know, friends, homebrewing friends are like, hey, I'm going to Belgium. What are not miss? And everybody has their own. So
yeah,
and I think those are great recommendations. So,
Dave, thank you so much for joining us today on this. It's awesome.
Yeah.
And, thanks for having me.
And you have a lot of your recipes on your blog, as well as some of the stuff, a lot of the stuff that we talked about as far as grisettes, recipe formulation, a lot on Saison as well. So we would recommend, if listeners out there want to know more, go to horscategorybrewing.com. That's horscategorie brewing.com.
Right on.
Cool. Thanks, Mary.
Dave Jansen, thank you, man. Much love. We'll see you at the National Homebrewers Conference at the latest.
All right.
Yeah. Cheers. Thanks again.
Thank you.
About it.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening. Like a red-eyed wild stallion, hell-bent to win, a battle with no winners, a war with no end. On the banks of forgiveness, you clutch to your burden, her waters abate.